And today, to continue that relationship, we celebrate the first day of unleavened bread. We are reminded that we are in a constant struggle, in a constant struggle with sin. Physically, we should have removed all the leavening from our homes. And after being in the church for a while, I've seen people that, man, they sometimes try to outdo themselves. You know, well, I cleaned my kitchen from leavening, all the bread, and I took, you know, alcohol rubs, and I ate corner, and I hear somebody else, well, that so-and-so took the trash cans, and he washed down the trash cans out in the gutter. And I said, man, this is... But more, even more challenging than just doing the physical part is removing sins from our minds. It is a continuous effort, a continuous struggle in our race. Race, like Paul mentioned, 1 Corinthians 9:23. This is Paul talking about blessings. Verse 23, I do all this for the sake of the gospel, so that I may share in its blessings. Now, he identified what his race was for the gospel, because Paul was, that was his duty. 24, do you not know what that in a race all the runners run, but only one receives the prize in this life? Run in such a way as to take the prize. Nowadays, they'll do anything to win. 25. Everyone who competes in the games trains with strict discipline. They do it for a crown that is perishable, but we do it for a crown that is imperishable. Back in the Olympics, back in the Greek Olympics, the winners used to have a wreath that would crown it was perishable. And I don't know if you heard, now they have a big deficit on umpires and referees for high school and middle school games, because it's gotten to the point that the parents have gotten very violent. And it's for what they pay these people, it's not worth it. And I don't know if you had a chance to see the documentary. There was a documentary on that. So my title of my sermon is Running Your Race, What You Have Been Assigned. Here on earth, man runs a race to compete, to win. But sometimes he loses. Why do they lose? Well, a lot of things, there's a lot of integers in that. Why? And lots of times it's because they didn't train hard enough. Got a little bit complacent. But most of all, in my experience, they've been distracted. Just a millisecond of being distracted. Case in point. The date was August the 12th, 2017. In the men's 5,000 meters final in the World Athletics Championship in London Stadium, London, England. It was, once again, Mukhtar Edris of Ethiopia, running against a four-time champion of Great Britain, Mo Farah. Now, maybe a lot of you might know who these gentlemen are, but if you're in the track and field circuit, these gentlemen's names stand out, because they're for years they have been racing against each other for the first place, and Mukhtar is always falling behind Mo Farah from Great Britain. But on this particular event, it was Mo Farah's last race, because he wasn't getting as lucrative offers for 5,000 meters. He was wanting to get into the marathons, but then he can get endorsements and all that stuff. So on this particular race, he was losing. And so he's seeking a fitting end to his master's long-distance racing career before moving to marathon running. that 34-year-old, we were talking about what is old for an athlete, Britain's bid for a fifth straight global 10,000, 5,000 doubles was scuppered as he settled for the silver against the Ethiopian. It was a thrilling finale. Now, it wasn't a slow race. They did it, both of them did it, in 13 minutes. That is flying. That's around a 4-minute mile. And the Briton did it in 13:32, and the Ethiopian did it in 13 flat. That's a searing, and his last lap, the Briton had to run his last lap to catch up. He did the last lap in 52 seconds. Now, the world record for the 200 meters is, I think it's 22 or 26 seconds. That gives you an idea. And this is after he's already won almost 3 miles, I think, lap, yeah. And he went ahead and did it in 52 seconds. This is a 34-year-old. But he did not. He admits he was distracted, looking for the Ethiopian. You know, he was also looking ahead to his other business adventures, getting into into the marathon running. He was distracted. Mr. Farrell was favored to win. Everybody was there was saying Mr. Farrell was going to win. He had beaten Edris time and time again. Now, Edris is, when he started running against the Briton, he was in his teens, 19. And he finally beat him when he was 24. But they placed the word complacency, maybe that's what he was using. He was complacent. But I can't understand in my mind how you can run 5,000 meters complacently, you know, and in less than 4 minutes. But nonetheless, if we're not in it, we can't say that. So he was not mentally prepared for this. In any sport, especially in running, you have to be prepared mentally. 1 Corinthians 9, same place, in verse 26. In verse 26, this is in life too, brethren, in spiritual life and in life. It says, therefore I run thus, not with uncertainty, thus I fight, not as one who beats the air. In other words, he's not doing this just for good looks. Verse 27, but I discipline my body and bring it into subjection, lest that I have preached to others. Now get a load of this. I myself should become disqualified. So what Paul is saying is that I'm going to be leadership by example. You know, I've got to do the right thing. But what good is it if I'm telling you, the Corinthian church, to behave themselves or not to bear false witness or not to do other things if I myself are doing them? Because society now especially has a way of compartmentalizing you. Okay, he or she is this, and they put them over here in their mind. And you're a liberal, so you put them over here, and you're a conservative. And so society has a way of doing that. And even in religion, they have now done that. They say, well, if you're a forward thinker, you go over here, and if you're a legalist, you go over here. And run your race, brethren. Compartmentalized. Let society compartmentalize. That's all they have to go by. We have examples now, as well as back in the Old Testament and New Testament. You had people who immediately broke down and compromised their beliefs, and those who did not astray. They stood firm until the end. They ran their race, even if it meant giving up their lives. We have an example. One of the examples is Joseph. He was 17 when he started having dreams, and he started telling his talking to his family. We can read through the Bible about his dream. And he talks, his brothers misinterpreted it because they thought he was going to be the king. And he said, well, this is a big ego test. Let's go to 37 of Genesis. Genesis 37, verses 2 and 5. Genesis 37, verses 2 through 5. And it starts on verse 2. It says, this is the account of Jacob's family. Joseph, a young man of 17. Now, I've read through the internet, they said, well, there's some people saying, wait a minute, he really wasn't 17 because the way things they took, people were aged, it was different, and he wasn't really 17. I'm here to say he was 17. He was tending the flocks with his brothers. Now, which brothers? The sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And he brought their father a bad report about them. What was a bad report about? You know, the bad report was they weren't taking care of the flocks like they were. And plus they were involving themselves in wrongful acts. I will not get into details, but and that's what Joseph came to report. And verse 3, now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons. Now, I get, it switches the analogy from verse 2 to verse 3. There's a whole segment that's missing. He's coming from a bad report, and now he's saying, now Israel loved his Joseph more than any of his sons. Because he had been born to him in his old age. And he made an ornate robe for him. In verse 4, with his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. Boy, that's a rough family to be in if you were Joseph. Verse 5, Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brother, they hated him even more because he was telling them how he was going to be superior. No. Bowing before Joseph in that dream didn't mean that he was going to be the king of Israel or the leader of his family. The dreams meant Joseph was going to be divinely placed in a position with the power and the influence to save Israel, not only as a family, but as a future nation. However, the misinterpretation of Joseph's dreams caused the brothers' anger and envy. Through it all, Joseph ran his race. He focused on what he was supposed to do. And here's another one. How about Job? Job had everything. Had everything. He had the money. He had a beautiful family. He had livestock. And in several disasters, he had nothing. He had I don't want to use the word right, but you could understand if he just throw up his arm and say, man, this is terrible. God, why'd you do this to me? But no, he didn't. He ran his race. And sometimes we get in that mode of saying, well, you know, man, all this stuff's happening, so this is terrible. Until a truck just barely misses you in the back of the thing. That's when everything kind of gets back into place. Let's go to 2 Corinthians 7:4. This is something just in case for those that feel like you're running behind on your race. Chapter 7 on 2 Corinthians and verse 4. And here's something Paul was saying. He says, I have great confidence in you. I take great pride in you. He's telling them, I have taken great pride. I believe in you. That's a coach. He's coaching them. I am greatly encouraged in all our troubles. My joy knows no bounds. So he's supporting them. He's saying, admonish them, keep it up. Don't give up. And that's what we need to as well. Even Job's wife, you've heard me say about this, is Job's wife said, why don't you just curl up and die? Why don't you just get out of here, you know? And we might hear things from other people say, well, you're still in that church? We might hear that, but I'm here to tell you, run your race, brother. Just like Job, run your race. Let's go to Job 2:9. Let's go and see what Job's wife said. Job's 2, verses 9 to 10. And it says, "Then his wife said to him, 'Do you still hold fast to your integrity?'" You mean, you're still doing this? You're still sitting on an ash pit, scraping boils with a clay tile. So why don't you just curse God and die? Why don't you? "But he said to her," and we should take a lesson from this, brethren. And it's I've been in management for a while, and it's management 101. It says, "You speak as one of the foolish women speaks. Shall we indeed accept good from God, and shall we not accept adversity?" In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. If you notice, he didn't personalize this. He didn't say, "You are a foolish woman." No, he said, "You speak as a foolish woman." So when we talk to people, brethren, make sure you emphasize on the point that you're talking to. Don't get personal, because when you get personal, then you direct the conversation to a personal instead of what you're trying to, your intention is. Now, what did Joseph and Job have in common? Of course, they stood their ground. They stood for what they believed. They ran their race. In a marathon, it's probably like the race of this life. You don't sprint, and you hit numerous walls. Some marathon runners say they hit their first wall, or maybe in 3 miles, 4 miles. And then a second one, or maybe on their 24th mile, they hit another wall. I can't imagine hitting another wall at 24 miles. My first wall is at maybe 500 feet, I think. Because if you do, you will not be able to finish. If you sprint, and you say, "I'm going to win. So I'm going to," you take off running and everybody's behind you, you're not going to last, brother. You pace yourself. You run your race. If it's all you can do is 3 steps a minute, well, you run your race. Ethiopia's Mukhtar Idris ran his race. He ran a 4-minute mile pace. Everyone's pace is different in the race of life. Paul wrote, "I fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I finished my race. I have kept the faith." That was in 2 Timothy 4:7. Brethren, you have to run your race, a spiritual race, not walk and then run. Not start off running and then the first part and then walk in the middle or take a shortcut. You run your race. You run all the way to the finish. One of the major defeaters is a distraction, and also in our spiritual lives is envy. 1 Samuel 18, brethren. 1 Samuel 18, verses 6 to 9. Now, here's one example of envy. Saul had already known that Samuel said, "Man, you just blew it. You know, you didn't do what God said. You're the king, and we told you to do this. And you didn't. So now we're going to take the kingdom away from you." He had already told him that. So now, in verse 6, it says, "Now it had happened as they were coming home, when David was returning from the slaughter of the Philistines, that the women had come out of the cities of Israel singing at the dancing and to meet Saul," and David was there, "with tambourines, with joy, and with musical instruments. So the women sang that they danced and said, 'Saul has slain his thousands.'" Just imagine, brother, slaying thousands of people. "And David," but David has slain tens of thousands. I can't even put it in my head. Tens of thousands of people. "Then Saul was very angry." This man is getting angry. "And saying, displeased him and said, 'They have ascribed David tens of thousands. And to me they had described only thousands. Now what can more have been to the kingdom, but the kingdom?' So Saul eyed David from that day forward." So he was upset that this man was slaughtering more people than him. Saul had already been told, so he should have taken his place and accepted his part of the race. Our former church, there were many members, but because the envy, we lost a lot of people. A lot of people did not have the discipline to withstand the turmoil. They no longer ran the race we are running. They want to run their own race. Now, in running your race, both physically and spiritually, you have to have fundamentals. There's a lot of fundamentals in all sports. But in running, you have fundamentals. Number one, first and foremost, it's form. You have to have the right form of running. When you run, you have to run physically. You have to have your shoulders back and your chest out. And do your legs running in synchronized with your arms. And it's last and always proper form. And in spiritual form, we have to do the same thing. We have to act like Christians do. We have to have the proper form. Number two, and being in the military, I came up with the word cadence. Cadence means rhythm. You have to have rhythm. Because it's once you get a rhythm, whether it's only a slow rhythm or a fast rhythm, you have a rhythm, and you can, and if you command it, you can take it all the way to your goal. But you have to have a rhythm. If you walk, if you stop and walk, you interrupted your rhythm. You have to have, even though it's a slow rhythm. Now, in running world, the optimal cadence back in the military, I was looking at the PT records, and it said 180 steps per minute. That's optimal. But we don't run your race. If it's more like walking, but it's keeping your pace, keep it. Third one is exercise. In order to strengthen your ligaments, because a lot of people start running, and they've never run before. And all that pounding on your knees and your ankles, you have to strengthen your ligaments in order so you can put your knees, keep your knees, and your muscles is to keep the pressure off your knees and your ankles. So you got to do your exercise and build yourself up to be able to run. And walking, you can start walking first to strengthen your ligaments. Four, stretching. That's something that very few people do, especially novice. You have to stretch before, especially after. You know, that's before, so you won't get what they call Charlie horses. And afterwards, because you won't be, you know, stiff the next day. And spiritually, it's prayer. Our stretching is prayer. These are the fundamentals of running. You'd be surprised at the number of people that don't do this. It seems simple, but it isn't. In Christianity, our race is similar. We know the fundamentals. We need the Holy Spirit to help us to maintain it. Because spiritually, it's tough. It's tough to be walk the line. It is. John 1, verse 19 through 20. Now, this is John the Baptist. Now, it starts off. This is a testimony of John the Baptist, when the Jews sent to him priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, "Who are you?" Now, spiritually speaking, brethren, get a load of this. It says, "And he confessed and did not deny, but confessed, 'I am not the Christ.'" Now, it could have been easy for him to say, "Yeah, I'm the guy that everybody's talking about. I'm the one. Yeah, it's me." And everybody oohed and aahed, and his head would have gone, you know. But he didn't. Let's read on. He says, I'm sure at one time or another, after demonstrating something, I'm reading off text here, teaching someone or coaching someone or a group. If we've been involved with teaching someone or coaching someone, sometimes we feel, he did it, or she did what I told him, yeah. So we catch ourselves inflating a little bit. The attention we get raises us up. It feels good. Sometimes we find ourselves performing or outdoing others just to get the attention. That's when we start sprinting in our race, brethren, instead of breaking our cadence. Here, John showed us differently. He could have said otherwise, like I said. Let's go to verse 27, going along with them. Verse 27 on the same chapter. It is he who, coming after me, is preferred before me. And he adds, whose sandal strap I'm not worthy to loose. So I'm not even worthy to even untie his sandals. That's right. He showed humility. And that's one thing we need to do. John ran his race till the very end. He never buckled. He knew what his ability, his calling was, his race. What his limitations were. He ran his pace. He paved the way for Jesus. Some may say, well, I can't do any of this. I can't, spiritually. What do you expect me to do? I'm in some of the church or some people that have in the behind and before the head. I'm blind. I can't walk. Well, I'm not too strong. Or skinnier. Or I'm bald. But remember, the majority of whom God is calling fits the above criteria. Let's go to Matthew 25, verse 29. So he's not calling a lot of the great earth shakers. He's calling regular people, brethren. He says, verse 29, I take it that everyone knows the parable of the talents. So let's hear it from 29. For to everyone who has more, more will be given, and he will have abundance. But from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the unprofitable servant into the outer darkness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. That doesn't fit the criteria of this government, does it? If you have something and you're not working it, in God's eye, if you're not, we're going to take it and give it to somebody that will. Every one of us that have been called have shortfalls. We all have shortfalls. And that we have to work on it. We all have been dealt, an elderly man told me this, dealt a hand of cards to play with in this life. And this, he called it his game, the game of life. Some of us have a king high straight. Some have a couple of pairs. Others have aces, and yet others have nothing. They have nothing, but they have no pairs, no three of kinds, nothing. But they go all out with what they have. But that's what God gave us. As long as we accept that, and we do everything we can with God, with what God gave us. Run our race. So we make the most of what God gives us. Everyone has heard the story about the race between the tortoise and the hare, right? Same thing. The hare was dealt the upper hand, and he could run. And the tortoise, he obviously couldn't. But he did everything that he could able to do. And the hare committed the number one problem, complacency. 2 Timothy 4:7, brother. I'm going to read the one we just said. It says, I have fought the good fight, I have finished the race, and I have kept the faith. Paul did not say that he was going to get first, second place. He just said, I'm going to finish this race. He says, we are not competing with each other, brother, to see who gets there first. Remember that those who are first shall be last, according to God's eyes. Matthew 20, chapter 20, verse 10. Now, this parable is midway. It's going into midway, and it's about workers working in the vineyard. And it's starting with verse 10. And it says, but when the first came, they supposed that they should have received more because they had been in the field all day. And they likewise received every man a penny. Everybody got a penny. And when they had received it, they murmured against the goodman of the house, in other words, the person that took care of the vineyards, saying that these last have brought but one, our, and those has made them equal to us, which have borne the burden of the heat of the day. But he answered one of them, he said, friend, I do thee no wrong. Did you not agree to work for me for a penny? Take thine and go thy way. I will give unto thee the last, and even as unto thee. In other words, I was going to give the guy that worked for an hour the same as he did to you. Is it lawful for me to do what I will with my own? It's my money. I can do what I want. That's what the good one said. And thine eyes evil, because I am good, so that the last shall be first, and the first shall be last. For many will be called, but few are chosen. Jesus does not show favorites, brethren. So don't focus on people coming in later, or because I've been here a long time and there's people here been just came in. It doesn't work that way. We all got paid a penny. Does not matter to God when in your life you entered in the race. Focus and finish it. Stay with the fundamentals of Christian living. Acts 20, verse 23 and 24. This is what Jesus telling his disciples. 23, I know that in every city the Holy Spirit warns me that the prisons and hardships are facing me. However, I consider my life worth nothing to me. My only aim is to finish the race and complete the task the Lord Jesus has given me. The task of testifying to the good news of God's grace. So finish the race, brethren. Use that what God has given you. No belly aching. Thessalonians 5. 1 Thessalonians 5. Now, I took up another translation on this. Thessalonians 5, verse 11. And it's called, I took it from the Berean Literal Bible because it had a little niche to it. It says, therefore, encourage one another and build up one another. It tells us to build us each other up, just as also you are doing. Help each other out. Paul is encouraging the church in Thessalonica to continue encouraging each other. Ethiopia's Mukhtar Edris ran his race, brethren. He trained. He used everything that God gave him. He used his talent combined with his training. He finished the race. As for us, our race we run is a lot longer than that of Edris. We need to stick with the fundamentals. Let's fear God and keep his commandments as we push each other towards the finish line of perfection.